delegate elections use the single transferable vote system, or STV, where members can rank the candidates in their order of preference, first choice, second choice, and so on. To learn more about STV, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Completed ballots must be received by September 30th. If you're interested in learning more about the candidates, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Thanks again for your support of KPFT.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Coming up next, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Find the right slider.
Man, this chair just, I put it to the full upright position and it just keeps sinking down.
All
right,
the plane's not going anywhere until you bring that seat back.
Drive low seats.
Look a little low.
It's a metaphor.
I feel like a low rider. Where's my bandana?
That's the chair I had last week. Would you like?
That sure smells like it.
I made the same joke, and he acted like he didn't understand the song. He claimed he didn't know the song.
What? Did all your friends have a lowrider?
Yeah.
Do they?
References. All right. Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo.
Are we gonna spend 15 minutes doing IRC tech support before we start the show today?
Will it irritate Laura?
Possibly.
She
said she wants us to try more gross candy, but I didn't bring any this week.
I had no more candy from a stranger. I will mention IRC once just to say that I have found a web client that works, so now you can go to geekradio.com and join the IRC.
Cuckoo.
And it also has information about joining it if you want to use your own client. So IRC, the website, I mean the IRC server is
failure.net.
IRC.failure.net.
There you go.
Failure.net.
It's .com.
Yes, it's .com.
No, it's .net. It's .net.
So, yeah, you can hang out in the IRC with us. You can also visit us at our website, geekradio.com, where Peter Hughes posts the links for the news stories. And also we have the podcast and the announcement for the Geek Gathering next week, which we're going to need a good Geek Gathering. We had a good Geek Gathering last month, by the way. We had a really, really good time. A lot of people showed up. It was the post-DEF CON debrief, and we had a good turnout. Maybe we'll have another good turnout. That'd be nice, but we are having a Geek Gathering. The temperatures are going down, which is nice in Houston. Good for a change.
Early Halloween theme, this looks like, by the banner.
Not this week, but next week, right?
Yes, a week from Friday.
Yeah.
Are we having any of the political candidates drop by?
Donald Trump will be there.
Donald awesome. Trump will be there.
Oh, okay, well, they'll both be there?
Yeah,
awesome.
Both
be there. They may or may not both be there. Come and find out.
Well,
anything's possible.
.net.
Yeah, I, for the first time ever, I posted an animated GIF to our webpage.
GIF.
Nope, GIF. Shut up. It's GIF. Jay says it right.
And it's 8-bit.
Choosing users choose GIF.
Nope, they don't. Well, they can choose it, but they're wrong.
Snooty snooters, snoot GIF. Yeah, well, at any rate, it's animated, it's an image, it's a pumpkin.
Deal wank.
No, it's okay. The file format is from 1987. It's or the well, it's technically
dancing baby.
1989 is the 89 revision, but it's okay to embrace. It's okay to embrace GIFs. It's all right.
Is it?
It's not new.
Thank
technology.
You for your reassurance. It's hipster cool retro.
GIF tech. GIF.
So it's the dancing baby.
GIF users could care less.
You know, speaking of the dancing baby, that is probably one of the oldest memes, I think, out there. One of the
it's
first,
one of the original first, ones.
It was
from popularized by Ally McBeal.
I was going to say exactly what I was going to bring up because
and it was and back then it wasn't necessarily you couldn't really just like go to a web page and see it. Like, people had to send it through email.
But what was funny is that there was it was the early days of the internet, and enough people were aware of it so that when it did show up on Ally McBeal, everybody knew what it was because they'd received it in their email.
Right,
and it took like not 10 minutes to download it.
Not a link to it. But the actual video or whatever it was it a video? Was it a move file?
A GIF.
No.
Pretty sure it was a GIF.
Was it a GIF? Okay.
It may have been an AVI.
Still took a long time to download.
Back then it was a large file. It was probably, you know, at least a meg or two.
Yeah, it took less time to download that than it took to download the first internet released episode of South Park, which was also
back then we were all using our Hotmail accounts and they only had 2 megs of space, so the dancing baby was 50% of your Hotmail allocation.
But I could watch it all day long.
That's right, you can.
Send
got
it to somebody else.
Yeah, and then Ally McBeal had a life-size dancing baby in one of her flashback episodes or something. I don't
Creepy.
Remember exactly what the storyline was, but
Who cares?
It was Dancing Baby. That's all that mattered.
That's right.
All right. So anyway, geekradio.com
Cuckoo.
And irc.geekradio.com or irc.failure.net.
Failure.
Wow. I love the echo coming over. Is that because of Pete?
Pete's just watching
San Antonio
TV.
Back.
It sounds like he's watching us on TV.
Sir, please turn your radio down.
Don't go in the basement.
All right. So anyway, those are the things you need to know about the show. Before we go along, I've got this guy, only because he sent me two letters.
Is this another one calling for my death?
No. This is
are we past
and
that
I want to give the guy props because they are typed letters from prison. So John,
like somebody put a typewriter in a cake and got it to this fellow,
John Falk, who's been in prison.
It wasn't in a cake.
He's been in prison for like 30 years, and he sent me two letters where he wanted to talk about the idea of, you know, I guess he has missed out on the technology thing that's been going on, and he freely admits that he's not that technical, but he was asking about technology that would allow you to translate any language if all languages were stored in a single chip on a device so that it would translate so that you could talk to anyone. Because he had heard us talking about copyright and China and not being able to speak Chinese and stuff. And I want to let him know that that's a great idea, but it kind of already exists in the form of many of the translation sites, and there are apps that you can load on your phone. And rather than storing all the languages in the world on your device, having a device that's connected to the internet allows you access to all these databases. But the one problem continues to remain when it comes to language translation, and that is that most, if not all, language translators translate word for word verbatim. And the way that language is used, you know, noun, verb, adjective placements are not the same. So if you translate, if you want to have a really fun experiment, if you have access to the internet, go to translate.google.com and put in, you know, like a paragraph or a passage, a famous passage from a book or anything. Just put it in to the translate and translate it from English to any language. Translate that language to another language and translate it a few times, and then take whatever you come up with and translate it back to English, and you'll get an idea of what all these people speaking these other languages heard you say, because it won't make very much sense.
The cool thing, and Google was kind of pushing that. Before that, there was Babelfish, which right. was a reference to, you know, the Douglas Adams books.
Oh, that
so,
guy.
Yeah, just that guy. Jay knows him. He's, you know, just that guy. Whatever. Author. A lot of books. Anyway, yesterday, Google announced in their blog, in the Google Research blog, that they're moving away from what they were using before, which was phrase-based machine translation, which is when you get those chunks that wouldn't maybe fit together and capture the true meaning. And they are moving to a, it's called the Google Neural Machine Translation System. So they're doing training techniques like machine learning, more or less, to try and get improvements in the matches. And they're saying that even the matches already, they're going up by like 74-75% better than the translations coming out before. So they're getting better.
Yeah.
But just like Jay said, it's still right now, no single chip does it. It's best to do it in the cloud, let someone else do it, come back. But eventually there'll be like a Babelfish kind of implant, I think, in a single chip.
Well, even
chip.
Then, so I mean, I wanted to talk about this just for a second. I don't want to derail the show, but it's really interesting.
Show derail.
It's really interesting that the fellow said, you know, on a chip, like make a chip that has all
system
that
on chip
there.
SoC, yeah.
But it's like the as connected devices get more common, and as everything that you have that is connected gets larger and larger amounts of bandwidth available to it, the idea of having to have something like that, you know, on a chip or in your pocket kind of becomes obviated, because you're typically always going to be in a place where you'll have access to some kind of network, and you don't have to have, you know, German on a chip or Chinese on a chip or whatever, because
salsa on a chip.
That's what they want you to have.
Because it's already up there. It's all already, Google already has it all, you know, it's already in the cloud, that nebulous phrase that is so terrible. You don't have to have it locally, because the massive increase in bandwidth means that if someone else has it, you can also have it.
And not only that, but by having access to data in the cloud, .net, is that data can be better curated.
Yes.
And manage. So, like, if the technology improves, if you have a translator app, but it accesses data that comes from the internet or algorithms that come from the internet, that stuff is maintained in a central database, and all devices that access it then have access to the updates. It's one of the reasons why I'm kind of reluctantly liking Adobe Creative Cloud, because while I download the apps to my computer, the updates are coming fast and furious, and I'm getting more and more features to my applications.
Even though over a reasonable amount of time, you'll have more than paid Adobe for the value of the software, and that's how they get you, man.
Yeah, I know.
Because they're reducing you to a line item that they can add to their quarterly forecast and hit their guidance, man.
But I do think
you're
those
perpetuating the system, right, man.
As computer speeds get faster as the memory gets cheaper, though. It's like, you know, we upload things into the cloud because we have more processing power up there. We've got more storage up there. But it's like, you know, if you have something on your phone that actually computes the time and shows you the time of day, we're not uploading that into the cloud so we can download a GIF or a GIF of, like, the time. We do it locally. So eventually I think it's going to be there to where, you know, it might take 20 or 30 years, but it won't have to go to the cloud, I would think. It'll
well, absolutely. Local, we're getting to the point where data storage is compact enough and processors are small enough to where it could all not only be on a chip, but the chip could be a part of you.
Maybe. But then you get into issues of information control and boundaries of copyright and all of that. Like,
if you download it, it's copyright, but if you're accessing it from a legit source,
if you access it through their controlled gateway to get to it, like, what if, and I don't know if this is true or not, but let's just say for the sake of building this argument, what if there is a set of Chinese language translations and stuff. It's like the Chinese translation library that Google uses or whatever. Like, what if that's copyrighted? And when you use their free service, that's okay because you're accessing it through their website. They can show you ads while you do it. It's being properly monetized. There are presumably rate limits there to make sure that you can't, like, send 10 million queries a second and like, translate it without, you know, going through them. But you can't take it out of their service and use it yourself because they own the copyright to it, or they have paid and licensed the copyright to it. So it becomes an issue of control and intellectual property to keep things in the cloud also, which is one of the things that Adobe does to you also, so people can't pirate
their software. Lots of local copies is the way to go, redundancy.
Right, there you go.
This is how the battle between machines and humans starts.
Over copyright?
Who gets the data? Yeah, over copyright. That's the Disney robots coming after everybody.
The battle between humans and machines.
That's why I've invented the data fog, which is you just put your data on, like, USB drives and scatter them everywhere.
No. I just don't back up. It'll eventually solve itself.
Well, you know, it's kind of freeing to lose all your data in one
fell swoop. Like, losing those second two Matrix movies felt pretty freeing. I assume that's what you mean.
Well, in an infinite universe, there exists some place where your data is still out there, somewhere in some combination of...
That's called the NSA.
Yeah, well, okay, that's
the
true.
The NSA
universe. Call them up.
Call them up. Can I get a backup, a copy of my data, please?
I know you guys have it.
All my photos from my phone that was stolen, yeah? All right, anyway, so that was my rant. I wanted to answer those questions or talk about that subject since he wrote me two letters. Don't think that if you write me two letters, I'll do that again. But
no, it's prices three
it was,
now.
It was novel.
Author's name again?
Getting a paper letter. John Falk, who's at the Polunsky unit in Livingston, Texas.
Well, thanks for listening, John.
Yeah, I got a captive audience, literally.
Pa-dum-pump.
Pa-dum-pumps.
I see what you did there.
I did do it, too. All right, so now the show goes on. We're going to turn it over to Peter Hughes. Via, what are we connecting with? Are you connecting with Google Hangouts or
sounds
Skype?
Sounds like he's connecting with a potato right tonight.
It was what?
I said it sounds like a potato tonight.
A potato?
We're riding it through the lion and witch's wardrobe.
Google Hangouts is what I'm using right now.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and hand it over to the Google Hangar outer, Peter Hughes in San Antonio, with the Technology Bytes info show. Oh, before I do that.
Psych!
Oh, was the finger on the button.
Before I do that. I just want to kind of like, you know, butterfly effect the upcoming fundraiser. You know, that starts next week. But if you want to go to kpft.org and make a donation, go do that. And it might make next Wednesday a little less abusive.
Earmark it for Technology Bite.
Yeah, just, you know, put a donation in, whatever you could afford. Just go do that. Maybe we'll have a little in the kitty when we get started next week. So I just want to kind of start that. But anyway, so now to Technology Bytes. InfoShot Deluxe Extraordinaire from San Antonio. Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, we were talking about losing your data and, you know, finding it, the NSA having it. Well, sometimes they don't have to go any farther than, say, Apple. This is interesting because usually they've been pretty much on the good side of privacy stuff. Apparently, though, conversations in their Messages app, which is the texting app that's on your phones and your iPads and on your Mac OS X, you know, your laptops and computers, conversations feature end-to-end encryption that makes the content of the messages impossible to decipher, so they're good on them for that. But according to documentation found by The Intercept, Apple tracks who its customers send iMessages to and is able to hand that information over to law enforcement when compelled to do so through a court order. When a text message is sent to someone, the Messages app pings Apple servers to see if the person has an iPhone or iPad in an effort to determine whether to send the message via iMessage or SMS. Each ping records a date, time, the number that was being texted, and the IP address, all of which is kept in a log that Apple says it stores for 30 days. I mean, on the plus side, they don't have the message, but still, knowing who you messaged when over the past 30 days is kind of not pleasant. The data on how messages works was reportedly obtained by The Intercept from a document entitled iMessage FAQ for Law Enforcement that was given to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement's Electronic Surveillance Support Team. While labeled law enforcement sources and for official use only, it's not clear who wrote it. So there's one to make you feel better and like you have some privacy on your iPhone. In other news, this one is a benefit of, you know, we're improving technology, and usually, you know, what happens when something new comes along. I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago. We were talking about, you know, Men in Black, where they were showing off, you know, future technologies that the Men in Black had that were going to be released to the public. And Tommy Lee Jones picked up a quarter-sized disc and said, this is the new compact disc, so I'm going to have to buy the White Album again. Well, this time, this story is the opposite of that, which is where you get more stuff, and I guess in a better form, without having to put in new, you know, without new hardware. The deal is the IEEE, the IEEE, I don't remember their whole, what the acronym stands for, but the people who are in charge of the standards for things like Ethernet have ratified a new specification for Ethernet called IEEE P802.3BZ. You don't have to care about that part. The part you want to care about is it promises 5 times the top speed of current specifications on the existing cabling that you've already got, in your walls or, you know, running through your office building or whatever. So that's pretty darn cool. The new standard allows the access layer bandwidth currently in use to evolve incrementally beyond 1 gigabit per second. Which is pretty much kind of the fastest that, you know, normal humans are getting out of a network. The new standard also includes a wireless component for 2.5G and 5G Ethernet that allows connectivity with 802.11ac Wave 2 access points. So the thing that's happened is wireless has gotten faster, and so the wired network has to be able to support that. You know, the ecosystem is kind of built for the wire to be faster than the wireless so that it can support all those, you know, wireless routers that are sitting around. Transferring more data at higher and higher speeds from the wireless to the wired network has never been so critical, wrote Sachin Gupta. Hopefully I didn't butcher his name. Vice President of Product Management in a blog celebrating the ratification. Going beyond 1 gigabit per second with existing Cat5e and Cat6 cables was a little more than a talking point 2 years ago, but now with NBASE-T, we have the ability to extend the life of an enormous asset, your wired network. The Cat5e and Cat6 installed just in the last 15 years now exceeds an estimated 70 billion meters of cabling, which is more than 10 trips to Pluto. That's how much wire they have made sure that you didn't have to rip out and put back in if you wanted the higher speed. So, I guess it's interesting that, you know, the kind of the highest speed internet you can get at home without, you know, special setup is gigabit. So that matches the network, the fastest network that you could have, the fastest wired network. And now finally they actually will make it where it goes back to the way nature intended, where your home network is faster, you know, 5 or 10 times faster than the fastest internet you can get. So, you know, obviously this is going to have to trickle out, and they have to build hardware that supports it and all that fun stuff, but at least you know you can look forward to faster Ethernet speeds coming in the future. And then now a couple stories with the not so good news. they're just unfortunate stories. It's not like ones that, you know, they won't make you depressed, I don't think. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the video game No Man's Sky. That one, there was like kind of a big rush of publicity, and it hit the shelves and right after it hit the shelves, people were complaining about bugs and oversights by the small studio that came out with it, because it was sold as a top-of-the-line, you know, big studio game. But now there's a new thing. You know, so there was the issue about some bugs in that, but the new issue is some players and press believe that the game that was released doesn't have a bunch of features that were promised in the early promotional materials, and now the UK-based Advertising Standards Authority is launching an investigation. It specifically regards material appearing in the on the No Man's Sky Steam store page, but the decision of this ASA, Standards Authority, would be applicable to all advertising that similarly doesn't reflect the final game, spokesman told Reddit user Azure UK, who posted a list of the main items being investigated. It just sounds like one of the things is that some of the disparities, like UI design, flowing water, and aiming systems, let's see, are things. Oh, it says among those disparities, some of them are things that change during a game's development, but others are more severe. It's clear that the released version lacks several features displayed in the press video, like animals interacting and crashing through environmental underbrush or large-scale space battles. So it may be that that there's kind of more trouble for the No Man's Sky. They've already did. There were supposedly a flood of refunds at the end of August, although still the game sold a lot. There apparently were over 750 units sold on the platform to date. So it may not ruin its. Oh, it won't ruin its its reputation. On I guess on Steam, because it has a mostly negative rating, so you know, apparently they just maybe put this out too soon and they're going to deal with it. They still made a ton of money, so I guess they'll just live with the they'll live with the ignominy of people not liking their game and saying they false advertised as they cash their giant checks. And finally, you know, you had to worry about your Samsung phone exploding. I don't know what the deal is with Samsung and their stuff exploding, but now apparently you can't take Samsung some of their top-loading washing machines in an airplane either because of, quote, safety issues. There are certain top-loading Samsung washing machines that they were machines from March made between March of 2011 and April 2016, that these washing machines, quote, can explode violently. Consumer Product Safety Commission is advising consumers to only use the delicate cycle when washing bedding, water-resistant, and bulky items. The lower spin speed in the delicate cycle lessens the risk of impact injuries or property damage due to the washing machine becoming dislodged. So there's that. So don't use your brand new Samsung phone that you haven't sent in for the recall while you're washing stuff, while you're washing bedding, water-resistant, and bulky items in your Samsung top-loading washer. And that's the news.
All right, got to do some laundry.
Yeah, I don't have quite as much news tonight as I would usually because I made the mistake of going this afternoon to get my eyes checked, and they dilated my eyes, and they're not quite all the way back.
Well, I've got one that we can talk about here. This is one that's going to be near and dear, I think, to a lot of listeners' hearts. BlackBerry, as of today, after hinting at it for a year, BlackBerry CEO John Chen has announced the company is finally and for permanently stopping making hardware. They will no longer produce hardware phones. They're going to transition themselves in, let's see, what does he say?
They're just
going
to have software phones now.
He says, John Chen described the move as a pivot to software. And the quote...
Pivot!
Yeah, the quote he has here says, The company plans to end all internal hardware development and will outsource that function to partners. This allows us to reduce capital requirements and enhance return on invested capital.
And they're going to rebrand to be called BlackBerry.
Yeah, something. So they're gonna take third-party devices and take their already customized version of Android and just throw Android onto their customized or probably not even customized third-party devices. And you know, and this is kind of sad. I don't know how often in years past BlackBerry has been a topic on Technology Bytes, but their focus, I mean, back in the dual CEO age, always was on producing the what they thought was the highest quality hardware possible with features that people who like are heavy into email and business use of a device want. So, you know, they lagged on adding cameras to phones, they lagged on the touchscreen, they lagged on a lot of things that turned out to be dominating market trends because they were holding on to their core of like, we want to make the best phone for somebody who is like a manic business person who has to do emails all day long. And you know what I have to say, in the jobs that I had that were sales-focused jobs, and in 2010, 11, and 12, when I was working for EMC and Symantec and you know, on the enterprise sales side, all of those guys had BlackBerries. All of the enterprise sales reps were hanging on to like the last-gen BlackBerries because they liked the physical keyboard, because everybody who is a salesperson is always texting and emailing, whatever, in the middle of while they were driving in between appointments. All those guys were on their BlackBerries all the time. And it was a phone that everybody hung on to because it had that physical keyboard and it was good for business users. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to keep them afloat after Android began dominating the market in the low-end segment and Apple began dominating it in the high segment.
Well, it's unfortunate that, I mean, I'm not a fan of BlackBerry, but I will say that BlackBerry users are relatively easy to support because of the limited nature of the devices. And
they install BESS and you're good to go.
As long as the BESS server keeps running.
Yeah. Right. I mean, from a back-end support, it can be troublesome. And
although I don't think that they've learned, because at the end when they were asking the CEO questions, he said that, absolutely, we are not going to put in some kind of deal where you say stuff to the device and then some external machine does special. That's going nowhere. That's the that's the touch screen, the modern equivalent of a touch screen.
That was neat. You went away for like 1 second, Pete, and then you renegotiated at a much higher bandwidth, and now you sound a lot better.
Yeah, you did go somewhere, but not anymore.
Yeah, right at 8:32, by the way.
Huh.
Are you still there?
No,
the AC is.
Oh, the dirigible is still flying.
Yes. It's 8:32.
Yes, you went out for a second and then you came back and then you went away again. Awesome, 8:32.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Speaking of devices that you talk to,
it's 8:32 is what I tried to say.
I think it's 8:32.
Could it be 8:32?
What time is it?
At the sound of the tone.
Alexa, what time is it?
At the lack of sound at the tone.
You know, so I acquired an Amazon Echo.
Like you hit somebody and took theirs, or you bought it?
No, my company, I've been at my same job under different regimes for the last, I celebrated 15 years at my company, so they gave me a stipend.
A watch that was pre-broken for your convenience.
A friendly reminder that you're not going anywhere. No, they gave me a $200 worth of gift certificates that I could redeem for, you know, different
mouse
restaurant
pads.
Gift cards or whatever.
You know, I was going to say, I would take the friendly reminder that you're not going anywhere. That's job security.
You're here forever. So anyway, one of the things you could exchange it for were Amazon gift cards. So I went ahead and took the $200 worth of Amazon credits. And I thought, it'll come in handy when I need to buy some more bird food or whatever. And then I thought, I've been kind of wanting to get an Amazon Echo, and I'll just use the money. It's like free money, and it covered exactly the cost minus a couple of bucks of an Amazon Echo. And so I bought it. And this is all about, you know, I talked before about how media, there needs to be a media device that allows you to basically control all of your incoming media. And while the Amazon Echo is not there, it's on the right track of what I'm thinking about, because the idea for, in using my wife as an example, she can't figure out all the remotes and how to switch between different inputs for, you know, going to the streaming media server or the, you know, the Fire Stick or Netflix and all that different stuff. If she could talk to it and ask it, say, play channel 13, play ABC, show me this, play this music, whatever, and it took care of switching on and brought all that to life, that would be great. So for music, it does that. That's what's cool. So you have access to Pandora, you have access to Spotify, you have access to the Amazon library, plus any of your own music. And you can tell it. You can just say, play this song by this artist, and it gets it right. So is app? Has anybody got the new Apple TV?
No. I don't know. A couple of the old Apple TVs.
I don't know if the voice activation for Apple, well, it doesn't do broadcast yet. So there needs to be a thing. The concept is getting there where you, if you have this one device and it's connected to all of your media streams and you can tell it which one you want to listen to or watch, that is what we need. That's the ultimate cord cutter's dream, is to have a single centralized device that activates. I mean, initially I was...
That part is sort of securing it. I think, did I tell the story last week of the guy... There's the story about someone using Apple with using Apple's HomeKit thing,
yeah,
with a Bluetooth lock, and the neighbor went up to the front door and said, "Siri, open the door,"
and it
unlocked the front door for him.
Just drive up and down the street.
Siri, shut the front door.
What needs to happen is I would like to be able to watch all my Amazon content and my, you know, play content from Google and everything I bought back on the iTunes store back in the day all in one place. And it seems like it's going to be Apple battling out against Amazon, battling out against Google.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to bring all that content together.
It's more than that, though.
Soon.
It's the front end, but it's also the media
content
organizations
owners
on the back end trying to get the most lucrative licensing deal so that they can license out their chunk to the one company that's going to pay them the best. And then in, you know, after a year and a half, they're going to pull it from that company and send it to another company. And that's why you can't watch old TV shows on Netflix.
But
that's what they're doing.
You don't necessarily have to, for example, you don't have to have the Netflix app built into the Amazon Echo. If the Amazon Echo can control and activate the device that has Netflix installed.
Right. So,
yeah, but where's the upside for them on that?
The system is good for the creators, but not the consumers, just the way it should be.
No, the system is not even really good for the creators.
That's how it was designed.
It's pretty terrible for the creators.
No. See, but it's competition, and so they can get a better price by shopping to pick the one that'll give them the best price for the content they created. Right, but it sucks for the consumers.
This is like how they say that by removing the ability to watch everything through one service, you're actually getting more choice, because now you can pick from lots of different services to watch all the things that you want.
Oh, wow, tell me more.
Exactly.
Well, at any rate.
Once again, how sheep's bladders may be employed to prevent earthquakes.
This is nice. Jaylee experienced, I guess, Amazon Alexa hearing Amazon Alexa
yes.
on the internet.
That's... So,
Alexa, buy a bulk
old
box of Depends.
So anybody listening to the radio with it turned up at all and that has an Alexa right now, the Alexas could be going nuts.
Alexa, turn off lights.
Alexa, increase heat.
Alexa, I need more Fixodent.
Alexa, play Rick Astley songs.
Alexa, volume 10.
And I had that experience. I mean, I've only had the device for a week. And so a commercial came on television about the Amazon Echo. And they said Alexa a couple of times in the commercial. And my Amazon Echo responded to that.
Alexa, execute order 66.
If I had a sprinkler system, it would have been on.
Alexa, play Baby Metal. Give me chocolate.
Playing from Jaylee's Prime account.
But it is cool. I went ahead, and we had talked about this in a previous show about a music streaming service that seems to have some of the best selection, and so far it's Spotify. Uh-huh. And so I went ahead and got a 30-day free trial of Spotify to play with it, and then I'll determine whether I want to pay the monthly fee or not. But it's good. I mean, you can ask it. I did notice, you know, one thing about the music stuff is it's really helpful if you know the artist and the song title.
Just for a second, I was like, if you know the artist, so they can like hand you the CD and be like, here you go, Jay.
No, I mean, like, if you ask for a song, you might hear the song by the original artist. You might hear a live version. You might hear a cover version. You might hear some weird remix thing that has that song sampled into it. We asked it for Eye in the Sky by Alan Parsons Project, but we just said, you know, play Eye in the Sky, and it came up with the riff from the beginning, but it was some kind of dance remix
thing. It was not the good version.
You said, Alexa, play Under Pressure, and it played Vanilla Ice. No, but Vanilla Ice said it was a completely different rhythm.
Yeah, he did da-na-na-na-na-na, and I did da-na-na-na-na-na.
But for being with a device for a week, you know, what I judge is how quickly my wife takes to the technology. And now my wife, anytime that I interact with anything voice activated, she just laughs her ass off, because it's always like, you know, whatever device, do whatever, and it completely mishears it and it repeats back the wrong thing.
And it says, why are you so angry?
And it just
calm down.
So she just laughs at me when that happens. So when I hooked this thing up and I set it up, she was immediately skeptical. But I showed her do a couple of things, and she saw that it worked. And so she took a chance, and she asked it. She said, play Bob Dylan, you know, some Bob Dylan song. And it did. And then she asked.
And then you were listening to the music like this from Alexa. Sorry.
Get that out of your system?
Yeah. Are you good now? Good to go. Let's do the show.
But wait
till they try to really boost the service aspect, so that when you request something, that you request the song and it's not by Bob Dylan, but you said it was, that then it attempts to sound like Bob Dylan doing that song.
Meta.
Well, I think that the technology will continue to evolve, and it will, and they do build some snark into the
ask it dumb questions and get dumb answers.
Yeah, well, you
or
can
you
ask
mean
it, like,
to it. Yeah.
What's the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? And it will tell you. It will say, well, is it an African swallow or a European swallow? So some of that stuff's in there.
How about Siri will do that if you pull out your phone and ask her the meaning of life? Siri will say something like that.
42 or something.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Well,
I
don't
want you to find out.
Let's find
don't
out.
Don't you have one of them?
I do. I got one of them. So let's see. Hey, Siri, what's the meaning of life?
Life, a principle or force that is considered to underlie the distinctive quality of animate beings. I guess that includes me.
That's Wait not minute. Funny at all.
Yeah, come on, man.
So is Hey, Siri always on, or do you have to?
I don't know.
Depends
if that's
on your phone
by
setting.
Default, but
because I have Siri completely off.
It's like, okay, Google's always listening. They think they're listening locally for those keywords. Once the keyword's triggered, it uploads whatever you do into the cloud.
I don't know. Just try it. Ask it.
Hey, Siri. Oh,
there you go.
It is on by default.
Oh. Okay, Google.
Oh. I'm going to try mine now.
Everybody pull out your phones. Hold it up to the mic so
everyone can
see.
So what's your accent on your...
I set mine to... I think I set mine to Australian. I like it better than the default English voice.
Hey, Siri.
Hey, oi, oi, Siri.
Mine didn't do anything.
Throw another dingo on the Barbie.
Siri.
Okay, Siri.
Siri,
voices.
Siri.
I've got it set.
Siri. It's not working. I turned it off on.
You've got an Android, dude.
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, British.
I'm just talking into the mouse.
British female is what I have.
Computer.
Hello, computer. Your virtual assistant. See, I like that. That's the one.
Yeah,
I
like that. I didn't really know that was a feature.
There's an Australian one too, and it sounds like it's angry at you. Siri, your virtual virtual assistant. I don't like that one as much.
No.
Amazon will actually Echo.
Your virtual assistant.
There you go.
Echo will show up on your local area network displaying web services. You can actually write other stuff with microphones or build in other like Internet of Thing devices. Like, you know, people have taken Raspberry Pis and done the same kind of service. And you can actually even take audio and upload it up into the cloud and
you just,
get
you just
data back.
Curl AWS. Garbage data into it all day long?
You probably could. At some point, I'm sure someone would notice and shut you down. But they've opened it up to where you don't actually have to have that hardware to go build one. If you've got like a developer account on Amazon,
hey, how much?
Go build your own.
This is sort of just, you mentioned it in there somewhere. How much does a Pi Zero cost?
I'm guessing probably $35 or $40.
Pi Zero?
I don't know. Let me see.
I'm just asking because I saw somewhere somebody said that they were selling at Micro Center for $1.
How much?
$1.
$1.
Oh, wow, I need to go. No, they're like $5 from this. This is what I thought it was. Okay, this is a tiny one.
I'd buy that for $1.
$5 from some places, but if they've got them from there for $1, I'm going to.
What they said.
I might go there tomorrow.
Hey, Siri, beatbox.
Don't leave home without your sunscreen, Jay. It's going to be hot and sunny.
That's great. That wasn't it at all.
It's like, what is she? She's giving you some good advice, I guess.
I can see why Cynthia laughs at you.
That's exactly the scenario where you ask it for something, expecting one result, and you get something different. And she laughs really hard when that happens.
That's what happens. I'm not as with it or as technologically savvy as everybody else, but the thing I use Siri for the most, and all this voice recognition stuff, honestly, is when I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking something and I need to set a timer.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so easy just to be like, you know, hey Siri, set a timer for 4 minutes and boop. It just, and you don't have to like, all right, let's see here. Which one is the timer? Is it in the clock?
Lighting goes a long way too. You should experiment with lighting because that's nice. Because you can set it to your cell phone when you come home, stuff goes in. Or you come in with groceries, you can just say, Amazon, turn on downstairs lights and boom, or turn off bedroom lights or turn off all lights.
Which would be weird because I don't have a downstairs. So when you come into your house, is it downstairs? Everywhere. You come in on a top level floor?
No, I come in, like, I called the base level downstairs. It's downstairs and upstairs. There's no
upstairs. Drives through the chimney.
Well, what?
Like a magic elf.
One of the things I like that we're playing with, we're doing an experiment now.
He says, Echo, play Barry White, and the lights go down.
You could set different moods and things like that. You can also say, like, if you just say play music, it'll say, like, oh, it's Sunday. Well, here's a Sunday morning mix, or here's a dinner mix. It'll try and make some, it'll start making, suggestions, or it'll start making guesses on what kind of mood you are in or should be in. Mm-hmm.
The Echo will? The
Echo will, yeah. Okay. Wait, just if you just say play whatever music, it'll say, this is something you might like from this.
Here's a lonely in your house wishing you were out with other people, but you don't have any friends mix.
Yeah, no, seriously, you can also say,
I'm talking to my technology because nobody loves me mix.
Yeah, say play music for, or like play this kind of music. Right. Like, music. Play lonely at home crying into my beer
music for losers.
All right, but one of the things that I like too is you install the Amazon, not the Amazon Echo or the Alexa app, Alexa, on your phone, and you can access things like you can have it play back what it, you know, you can play back the things you've told it. It shows you what it thought it heard, and you can hear how it sounds when you say it. But also, like, you know, you could create lists. So you say, Alexa, add this item to my shopping list, and it just adds it to it. And so you go to the phone and you have your shopping list instantly. And I guess you could do that with Siri probably as well. Yeah. But my wife is steadfastly not going to talk to her phone. She doesn't even like to carry her phone. I have to make her carry her phone.
Conversions. I use it heavily for conversions too, because I keep my phone docked on the desk right there, and I'll be writing. And especially if there's anything science related, and I need to really quickly come up with like whatever the metric equivalent is for this thing I'm looking at in imperial units, you can just yell out like, "Hey Siri, what's 3.94 miles in kilometers or in meters?" And it like knocks it right back. That's extremely
handy. It's not as good as, like, I don't think it's as good as Google and Siri, but the Echo stuff, it's good for just base facts, like what's the capital of Idaho.
Well, no, I mean, we were playing dominoes on Sunday, and my friend Jim Hinkle was over, who's a musician, and for some reason we were talking about Cher and the Allman Brothers and all of that stuff, you know, when she was married to Mark Allman, and it's like, when did that happen? When was that? Was that before? So we said, Alexa, when was Mark Allman married to Cher? Dave Allman, I can't remember which Allman.
Greg Allman.
Greg Allman. One of them Allmans. So, but it answered the question. It said they were married in 1973 or whatever the year was. So, you know, like, as we're having this conversation, so we're having this really great animated conversation, you know, around a game of dominoes, and we're, and you know, you think about that, you come up with these questions you ask all the time.
In the old days, this would have turned into a complicated bar bet, and it just would have kept going.
Right.
Argue about it for days.
You used to have to go find the laptop or the or the tablet and look it up by typing.
You used to have to go find an Allman Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Cher's obscure sister. Or you ask like what Cher's last name was. But it's great because it's like a fourth person in the conversation. It's just sitting there. You know, and I hadn't played with it with my previous iPhone. The microphone that worked with Siri was broken, so I didn't really get into the voice activation on my phone for over a year. But with this device in the house, you know, you could just ask it. So it's like you know, instant fact check.
I do like that there's the trigger word, though. I'd be really disconcerted if it came in and said, like, all y'all are wrong. Here's the real answer.
I have been listening.
I think somebody actually filed a Freedom of Information Act with the FBI to ask
them. And they said no.
No, they said we can either confirm or deny whether or not we've ever used.
They're listening. They probably have it in.
No, they just take the data from your Samsung smart TV.
It's just metadata.
One of the things I'm going to work on, maybe we'll bring this out to a geek gathering, is I'd like to have probably a BeagleBone Black or Raspberry Pi listen for the safe word, kill the mic on more or less on Amazon Echo in all the house, all the different echoes in the house, and then have it to where I know for a fact that it's only passing on audio once I do that safe word. Because you can do kind of like a proxy, like an audio proxy, and send in the streamed audio straight to the Amazon for it to go. So I'm going to try and do something like that. We'll see if it's going to be easy or hard. But it's probably not worth it.
You're talking about setting up some kind of firewall?
Well, yeah, more or less a voice firewall to where my device before it will hear that. It'll say like, okay, Barrett said this. And then it'll start recording everything I say, pass that to Echo, and then let it go from there to where Echo's not listening to everything. Because you really don't know what it's passing up there. I've scanned the network and made it go through like a LAN tap. But if there's still some packets, I'm sure it's just communicating, saying, hey, everything's fine, everything's great, there's any software for
does
me.
It,
but
does
I
it,
don't know that.
Does it...
That would be more concerned about Google collecting that data.
Does it locally cache stuff? If you just unplugged your network connection and talked for a while and then plugged it back in, would it have stored that and then it would upload it?
No, it goes dead pretty quickly. You'll get whenever you lose internet connection, you'll get the red ring up top. It kind of goes like Sauron's eye, and then it just like stalls out and says, sorry, can't connect.
I kind of like the red ring. I wish you could can you change the color to that?
Yeah, you can. It's a little bit programmable. Like they just opened up the API maybe a month or two ago, and I'm sure there's going to be more stuff. And even if you don't want to write it yourself, there's going to be third-party developers that are going to continue to put stuff out there and do stuff with skills, I think.
Let you upload like a demon voice for it.
Well, in terms of just ease of use, I mean, I unboxed it, and it sets itself up as a hotspot. Mm-hmm. When you first turn it on, the ring is orange, and so you connect your laptop to that. You're logged into your Amazon account, so you don't actually have to authenticate to the Wi-Fi, and then you can configure it for your home Wi-Fi, and it's smart. It turns itself off as a hotspot once you have it configured, so your laptop goes back to your home network connection like it should. You don't have to like connect to it and then do your work and then go back to your Wi-Fi and connect back to your home.
Simple as that sounds, that would mess with a lot of people. And that's doing like embedded development. You've got to jump networks and do weird tool chains like that. And it can get really frustrating. You can make really stupid mistakes really easily sometimes. Like, why won't my code load? It's like, because I'm actually not even connected to the right network right now. But yeah, so it is impressive the way it just does it on its own. Like, it really does just kind of work.
It's not super intuitive. I mean, it tells you kind of what you want. They push you more towards the iPhone app or something like that rather than the desktop app. And I wanted to do it from my laptop, and you think, I got to go download an app. No, you log into a certain website.
Yeah, just alexa.amazon.com and the local net will point you to where you need to go.
I wonder if I could reach it from outside.
I don't think you can.
God,
I've tried
I would
that.
Hope not. Not by default, anyway.
Although my Android app will let me control stuff in the house, so I can like go into smart home and turn my lights on and off and stuff like that.
Oh, well, so can I.
Wow, who goes first? Ready? Who can make... Actually, only your wife is home, so who can freak out the wife fastest?
Oh, you know what? I have that hooked up. I probably could.
Alexa, open firewall.
I have realized it's best
Alexa, kill all humans.
It's best to make sure no one's home before you show off that functionality and getting like, hey, what are you doing with the lights right now?
No,
like, oops.
So what do you use? I mean, since we've only got a little bit of time before the break, and what do you use to control the lights.
I went into Philips Hue, so pretty much all my stuff is Philips Hue. So I've got maybe 21 or 22 lights. They're all mixed. And actually, my power was disconnected because some glitch in the computer system that matched up my meter to my
house. You have
any
Philips Hue lights in your bedroom?
I do. Well, I have a
Isn't that terrifying when that happens?
Yeah, but the nice thing is I've got a lot that are battery powered. So even when I lost power, I had 10 or 12 hours of actual light in the house, which was really nice.
Well, they're really low
These
power.
Are the GOs. Yeah, the little GOs. Yeah. Because they just, LED
power.
So
they just on a charger all the time?
Yeah, so they're plugged into the base. There's just a little bitty thin place where you plug them in, and then there's a power thing to where if you want to take them around. These are the small kind of half circle.
Are they
half
Wi-Fi
smaller.
Enabled?
Bluetooth.
Bluetooth.
Bluetooth low energy or Bluetooth, depending upon which version they are.
These are the battery part.
Yeah, so
right?
What you do is you actually have a hub. So you've got what's called a Hue hub. That has a Bluetooth to Wi-Fi bridge. The Wi-Fi on there talks to your home router. So the Bluetooth...
No,
yeah, believe
it's
so.
Wired.
Or it plugs in. Oh, you're right.
It's
plugs
wired.
In, yeah.
There's
so
no... And they don't use... I don't think it uses Bluetooth. I think it uses DECT.
Is it
DECT? DECT?
Ah, well, it's...
No, it's not. It's Z-Wave.
ZigBee. It's ZigBee.
All right.
There you go.
ZigBee.
So,
point is super low energy.
So you have a hub.
You've got
that
a small
controls
hub,
all your lights.
And it does not do Wi-Fi. You've got to actually physically plug in an Ethernet cable into your hub. But the point is that exposes it to all your wired devices, too. Whatever's on the LAN, really.
Yeah, the whole LAN. Wired or wireless.
But yeah, you're right. It's not Bluetooth low energy. That because it does have some reach. It's ZigBee.
Yeah. But it's neat. I've been using them for a long time. If there's one complaint I have, they're really...
H-U-G-H-E-S?
H-U-E. Philips H-U-E. Actually, if you go to Amazon and you go to
royalty.
I'm sorry, but your people super low. I didn't mean to talk over you, but we can barely hear you in the phones.
I said, when Jay said, is it H-U-G-H-E-S, I said, yeah, I get a royalty every time somebody lights up.
The one thing I don't
light.
Like about them is they can be used as a normal light. You can screw them into a light fixture and then flip the switch off, flip the switch on. If you don't ever want to touch your smartphone, you'd be wasting $30 for a light. But you can use them that way. And so, ideally, you screw it into the fixture, flip the switch on, and then from then on, you use your phone or you use
or
a cron job
or
whatever.
Or Alexa
but,
will do it.
Yeah,
Alexa will do
could
it.
You say, Alexa, turn on specific lights?
Yes. The way I've got it, I know we're running out of time. I've got mine broken into rooms and then into different groups like that, to where I can just say, for instance, bedroom, or I can say all, or I can say upstairs, or I can say, all.
So
you,
I can replace the light bulbs in my lamp.
Yeah, and that's actually
neat.
With
these bulbs.
Yes.
I held off on doing that and just bought fixed lights and put those all over and then decided, hey, I want to try some of the bulbs. The bulbs are actually really neat because they'll go almost pure white. They look like normal bulbs, but then immediately you can have, whatever you
Philips
like.
Philips is very good at the
disco.
The colors
disco.
On them, the color temperature on them.
What is the...
Go to your Amazon and then hit anything that has to do with Alexa, and then there will
just
be
home
devices
and say,
you can
Alexa,
use Alexa,
buy Philips Hue lights.
Yeah.
Buy all the lights.
So while you're looking that up, the one thing, I'll get this out real quick, is because the fixture has to remain on, if you lose power and then you get power back, the lights come on fully. So if you have them in your bedroom, that can be super exciting at 3:30 a.m. when you have a lightning strike.
Now, I'm just thinking about just in the main living area, I've got three lamps, and that might be just a good place to do that because...
Maybe.
Yeah,
it was probably
house,
a cheap 3-pack.
You noticed?
I didn't.
There you go.
Didn't notice.
That's how well they work.
Do it and don't tell Cynthia, and then just amaze her that you can control lights by Alexa. She learned. Look what Alexa learned.
Well, she's. I gotta ease her into it slowly. But that music tells us we have to ease you into a little break. So we're gonna take a little break. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Link.
And he's
Groovehouse.
.net.
Are you radioactive? Have you ever wanted to build your own real FM radio station? Want to learn how to do it in one weekend?
Yeah.
We've got you covered. The Grassroots Radio Conference of 2016 is being held in the Superfund Spa City, Hot Springs, Arkansas. Just a lazy afternoon's drive away. This down-home conference is jam-packed with dozens of sessions on every aspect of station creation. It's a hands-on boot camp for radio activists. You're going to be networked in with all the national movers and shakers in community radio. And fun? We got you covered. Hot Springs is a vacation location full of cultural and aquatic adventures. Go gallery hopping and take long soaks in our thermal baths. It's one fabulous little town. So mark your calendar. October 7th through 11th, the Grassroots Radio Conference. And for all info, check us out at www.grc2016.net. That's grc2016.net. See you there, Radioheads.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. And participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2, contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Then step 3, fill out the employee portion of the form completely and send that form to KPFT, attention matching gifts, at 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. So help out your community radio station today. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
Wow, that's a painful reminder that I did not do Barrett time. Thanks, Groovehouse. I think we've got some phones. If you'd like to talk to Groovehouse, please call.
Three things that don't happen anymore around here. Cuckoo.
Yep.
Barrett time. Yep.
Answering phones.
Answering phones. Yeah.
We were trying to control our lights remotely, which I've got my bedroom lights
there
on.
There was a, I don't know if it was presented at one of, at DEF CON or something a couple of years ago or not, but there was a security paper I read, and I've been trying to dig it up because I think of it every once in a while and I can't find it anymore. The security researcher was talking about the dangers of internet-connected lighting, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like on one hand you're like, well, what are they going to do, like turn my lights on at night and wake me up and deprive me of sleep? But the researcher had discovered, and this wasn't with the LED powered ones. This was with not incandescent. What's CFL? CFLs. These were with CFLs that had internet reachable on-off switches. They discovered that some switches could be toggled.
We like overpower them
at an extremely fast rate. They didn't have rate limiting on input, so they could be turned on and off like several times a second, and the lights would burst into flames because the switches would overload.
It'd be like
from
a UPS
toggled.
If you had a lot of gas filling up the batteries.
So, and I mean, that was kind of scary actually, because you know your convenience internet connected lighting could explode and kill you.
It's no more dangerous than owning like a what is that? The Samsung 7? I'll take my chances with the lights.
That one could explode even if it wasn't internet connected. You could put it in a Faraday bag and it'll still explode.
Faraday bag.
That's what they call them.
I got you.
A little bag with the foil on it. It's where you should be keeping your phone.
Farabag.
That's it for Barrett time. Best Barrett time ever, man.
Best one this month, maybe year.
Speaking of best play ever, man, did you go to the Wes Anderson fair? Did you actually go out to the Bottle Rocket?
What?
No Bottle Rocket Motel for you?
Oh, the lovely soiree at the Bottle Rocket Hotel.
That's a geeky kind of fair of movies, you know, yeah. Not a lot of tech, but, you know, definitely.
No, yeah, I did. It's the fifth year they've had it, and I've actually gone, my brother mentioned it to me before they had it the first year. That's how I found out about it, but yeah, I've been every year. So, yeah, it was a couple weekends ago.
Was Wes Anderson there?
No. Wes Anderson's never been there. The only person who was ever
well,
there...
Well, that's lame.
The only person who was ever there was...
Bill Murray?
Mr. Little Jeans.
Was Robert Musgrave, who played Bob Mapplethorpe, potential getaway driver.
So he didn't direct anything. He just called in and said, you guys go to this motel, shoot the film, I'll be back kicking it in Houston.
Technology violence, technology violence, technology violence. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, from 8 until 10 p.m. Listen to J&P perform death-defying talk radio support before your very ears.
Technology Bites.
How can we make it even better? How about everyone gets in free? Yes, you heard that right. We must be crazy. That's Wednesdays, 8 to 10 p.m. on KPFT 91.1 FM. Be there and be square.
You'll pay for the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
We need to bring all of those back, everything that is applicable to Wednesday nights.
I think almost all of them were for Wednesdays 8 to 10.
Al-Qaeda, McDonald's, Enron, the U.S. government, KPFT, big business, Dick Cheney, Starbucks, your mom. What's the thread that ties all of these together? Technology. We need a serious show for these serious times. Technology Bites. Technology Bites, 8 to 10 p.m. Wednesdays here on KPFT 90.1 FM. Technology Bites. We're serious. Seriously. No, really, we're serious. Okay, you can stop the music now.
Jay Lee and Peter Hughes of Technology Bites would like to give you this friendly reminder. Technology Bites should not be used to quote-unquote pick up chicks.
Hey, baby. You come around here? I didn't like you anyway. Hey, baby, how's it going? My name's Flicted. Anyway, now that we've gotten the formalities out of the way, I got this little show. Well, radio show, that is. Yeah, 8 to 10 p.m. Wednesdays on 90.1 KPFT. I'm kind of like the star and everything, but hey, you should check it out. You know, you're not doing anything. Yeah, it's called Technology Bites. Hey, what's wrong? Where are you going? At 8 to 10 p.m. It's a call-in show. Yamame! Wednesdays, KPFT 90.1, Technology Bites!
What's a Yamame?
Used to be.
Call me.
It used to be a call-in show. There used to be a guy named Dick Cheney. Or there used to be a company called Enron. Boy, that really dates us, doesn't it? You should pledge for that.
Yeah.
KPFT.org.
Pledge and we'll make a new one.
No, you know, that's when Inflicted was really, really
good
contributing.
Yamame.
Yamame.
I don't know what that is.
It's Call Me in Spanish.
Oh, that, okay. Well, now I feel like an idiot.
Oh, you know, not a bilingual one for sure. All right, so second half of the show, and we just had a little trip down memory lane. It's nice to remember stuff.
I don't remember anything, Jay.
Sometimes I forget.
I can't remember the things I've forgotten.
It's all darkness. All is darkness.
Speaking of darkness, what's the next segment, Pete? Oop, I surprised him.
He's sleeping.
He's in the bathroom.
Maybe he's not there.
Don't bother him.
We lost him.
Did he die?
Aww.
Everyone dies.
He's asking on IRC if his stuff's on over here.
Have you got him potted up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that really even work anymore? I mean, are those analog pots in there? Isn't it all just digital jiggery pokery?
No, it's still sliders.
Yeah. All right.
Not the good kind either. Sliders.
Analog.
You could go for some sliders.
Analog sliders.
All right. 713-5.
Burgers.
Like sliders.
Our radio show hit a bump and we went on beatlessly.
I'm always kind of disappointed when I get to eat sliders, like the actual White Castles. I took a work trip to St. Louis once.
Just for sliders.
Well, we were there for like some kind of really incredibly boring RFP evaluation, but I wanted to. We had just watched, you know, Harold and Kumar go to White Castle for like the first time I'd seen the movie, and the St. Louis trip was right after that. And I was like, man, you know what I'm going to do when I'm in St. Louis? Ah, man, I'm going to get some White Castle. It's going to be amazing. And I, you know, we checked into the hotel, and I don't even know if I had my iPhone at that point, but I pulled up the, you know, MapQuest or whatever, and I found there was a White Castle just down the street. Got in the rental car, and I was like, anybody else want to go to get White Castle? And they were like, no, what are you talking about? We're going to go get a nice dinner at the nice restaurant because we're on an expense account. And you're going to go do White Castle? I was like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. And it wasn't that great.
Yeah, see,
it's not all that great.
I was in Chicago, I think, back in the early 90s, and I was real excited because you know the Beastie Boys mentioned White Castle in their songs, and so I was like, oh man, I got to go to White Castle, and I was like, wow, this is pretty much like it's like a 99-cent hamburger from McDonald's, but not as good.
Right, and you got to eat like you know many of them. You can't just have like one because it's you know
the size
big.
Of a biscuit.
Well, but and it was deceptive too because I was like I knew they were tiny because I had seen and you know the movie.
But it's on a tray, and there's like you know like it's like a 8x12 tray of like biscuits that were all cooked together, and then one big 8x12 square piece of meat.
Hello,
somebody's calling.
Come in.
Hello.
Press the button.
Pete's calling himself on his own line.
Well, I guess, you know, no one wants to talk.
Alexa, answer the phone.
I was checking out the IRC, and guess who's in the channel?
Ophelia?
Ophelia.
Awesome. Ophelia. Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah, we haven't seen Ophelia in a long time.
He showed up a couple weeks ago.
On the new server?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he hadn't been around the old server forever, and we invoked his name, wondering if he'd find his way to the new server.
And he did.
And there he is.
Maybe he's just on every server everywhere.
No, he wasn't on our server when we were on.
It was a new server, though, huh?
Yeah. Is maybe he joined every new server.
He's not sleeping now, though.
That's good.
He's not responsive, but he's also not marked as sleeping.
Can you hear me now?
Hey, there you are.
It's that guy.
I don't know what happened. I
don't either.
End the call and start it back up.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't that it was down because when it started ringing, it was definitely loud over here.
Has anybody
I could hear you guys talking, but it just wasn't coming from my side.
Hey, Siri, say Alexa.
Oh, my phone! My phone's going mad! Jerry, what have you done?
There's probably a way, especially with the skills, to get them to answer each other back. I would assume there's probably like a magic question that gets them to repeat the names in the question. So it'd be
like
cool to see, like,
YouTube
yeah, drop the mic, rap out.
Could you say, like, hey, Siri, what is Amazon's Alexa?
Yeah, something like that.
Hey,
yeah.
Siri, say Alexa.
I see.
They're not gonna
playing it cool there, is she?
It got what I asked right,
mm-hmm.
But then it just said, I see.
Can you just say, what is
Well, I know with
what is Amazon Alexa?
I know with Cortana, I know you can ask Cortana questions about, like, Siri, and Cortana will smartly respond.
Hey, Siri, say Alexa.
You fail at technology.
Ready to send it.
Siri, help Apple recognize speech.
Okay, I won't send it.
Where was she going to send that?
Hey Siri, have you heard of Amazon Alexa?
I don't think I've heard that.
That's a lie.
Hey Siri, do you know Cortana?
I'm afraid I can't answer that.
Ooh, sensitive.
That sounds extra snippy in the British accent, by the way.
When it fails kind of in an asinine way.
They know each other. They're just not going to admit it on air.
All right, so we got Pete back. That means we can do a segment.
This is true.
Which segment are we going to do, Pete?
Well, Fairway I think the segment? Next up is this.
Bye.
All right, enough of all this garbage about audio-driven devices from Amazon. Apple may be planning to introduce Siri to a new home, one that doesn't live in your pocket or on your wrist. A Bloomberg report that I found from Ars Technica suggests Apple may be developing a smart home device that uses Siri to control other devices around the home through, you know, audio, like a speaker thing. According to the report, Apple will try to set its product apart from Echo and Google's new home device by incorporating, quote, more advanced, unquote, microphones and speakers as well as facial recognition sensors that could help the device identify who is in the room. Apple has acquired the startups FaceShift and Emodient over the past couple years, both of which have experience in facial recognition technology. Since the device is assumed to be controlled by Siri, it could be used for a lot of the existing Siri commands that you're used to. You might be able to ask the device to read your email, stream Apple Music, or send a text message. Apple reportedly first tried to integrate Siri into the Apple TV, which would let users speak commands to the set-top box. However, the project was never really completed, and Apple instead decided to integrate the voice commands into the controller. So it sounds like this whole kind of voice command thing is starting to take off. Of course, this is just Apple, this is them getting into it. And so, obviously if the hardware doesn't stand up to it, or if they don't feel like they can get a really good position in it, then it may, may disappear without ever hitting the market like many other things. This one's really rough. There's a new piece of malware for Mac OS or OS X, whichever you want to call it. The security researchers at Palo Alto Networks have identified a new Trojan known as Complex with a K, which can download, execute, and delete files from an infected Mac. Interestingly, the Trojan will also save a PDF document to the infected system concerning the Russian space program. So I don't know why they would do that, but the PDF document details planned Russian space projects from 2016 to 2025, but also acts as a decoy. Complex functions as a group of tools that will attempt to secretly communicate with its creator's command and control servers, send the data back on the version, username, and process list running on the affected system. It can also receive instructions, and it will forward the results to the control servers. The tough part is that it seems to exploit a known vulnerability in Mac Keeper antivirus, which is just a total piece of junk that people get fooled into installing to think that they're going to, be helping their Mac to be safer. And the Mac Keeper thing has apparently got the vulnerability is that it can trigger a Mac to execute remote commands upon visiting specially crafted websites. One way that people encounter this threat is if they open a malicious link found in an email. Apparently, this may be from elite Russian hacking team known as Sofacy Group or Fancy Bear. It's also noted that two internet domains used by the complex Trojan, AppleiClouds.net and iTunesHelper.net, have been associated with other cyber attacks attributed to the Russian hacking group. Fancy Bear has been blamed for hacking conspicuous targets like the Democratic National Committee. So, first off, get Mac Keeper off your machine. It doesn't help you. And second, be careful about malicious links in emails. If you click it, you can open yourself up to a world of exploitation and hurt. So,
keep an eye on that one. Don't forget to donate during the upcoming fun drive, where we'll give everyone a free copy of Mac Keeper.
If I install my copy of Mac Keeper, Jay, can I call you about spyware?
If Groove has to answer the phone.
And let's see, if you have the new iPhone and you're having trouble with your headphone dongle, where it's like not working, cutting out, iOS 10.0.2 is out and is aimed at fixing that problem. So you may want to do that. That's the issue where the headphone audio controls wouldn't work, so you can't adjust the volume or turn the microphone on and off or mute it and stuff. It also resolves an issue that caused photos to quit for some users when turning on iCloud Photo Library. And then there was another issue that prevented enabling of some app extensions. So it's a pretty small update, but of course, if you've had any of these problems, it's a big update that you really want to install soon. And last but not least, on the rumor front, now we've got the iPhone 7 is out, Apple Watch Series 2 is out, and the news cycle is pretty well you know, run through on those. Attention is now turning back to the Mac lineup, which has been in need of updates for way too long. Rumors are suggesting that Apple's preparing to update several of its Mac lines before the end of the year, led by a redesigned MacBook Pro that has been rumored to be ready for launch as soon as October. Mac Rumors has learned that Apple is moving rapidly toward the launch of the new MacBook Pro models, with the company's current development work on macOS 10.12.1 focused largely on preparing the operating system to support the updated hardware's new features, which the rumors, of course, have said would have things like Touch ID support and an OLED touch bar that would replace the function keys. You know, we've heard, you know, you've heard that one before, especially if you're following here. Mac Rumors' understanding is that Apple's planning to see one more beta version of macOS 10.12.1 for developer and public beta testing early next week, with the goal of finalizing the update by the end of that week so it can be loaded onto the new hardware that's currently being produced. Obviously, if something goes wrong, then Apple could adjust their plans. But if it holds true, Apple could have its new MacBook Pro models ready to ship to customers sometime in the second half of October. There's also a rumor of launching updated MacBook Air models with USB-C ports and new iMacs with AMD graphics chips before the end of the year. It's not clear if all these things would be done simultaneously, and it's also not clear if Apple's going to have a media event to introduce any of this, or if it's just going to have a press release, or even just a, you know, the Apple store goes down and comes back up with new stuff on it. And lastly, Apple's reportedly working with LG on a new 5K external display to replace the discontinued Apple Thunderbolt display, although that one, the time frame, there's not even any reports on the time frame. There's also not been any word about the Mac Pro, you know, the trash can shaped one, and the Mac Mini, both of which also significantly need updates. So that's all the, I guess, good and bad news for now.
Man, I do not want to know what the price tag is going to be on a Apple 27-inch external 5K display, especially considering what the price tags are for the nice ones that are already in 4K. I mean, they're not okay. They're not super duper bad, but I mean, you'd be talking a grand minimum. God, and then maybe even potentially more than that, because the 27-inch Thunderbolt displays that they've discontinued, those were $1,000 a piece too.
And they were, you know, yeah, and they kept them at $1,000 when they were superseded by models that had a lot better resolution and picture quality for a lot less money.
Be interesting, because I run two of those. I have my main iMac, which is a non-Retina iMac, and then I have two 27-inch Thunderbolt displays, one on each side. So I have triple head at home, which since I work from home and have tons of stuff on my screen, it's really helpful. But fortunately, my iMac is in no need of replacing. It's a 2013 model, and it's still rolling along fine. But yeah, the idea of upgrading across the board to, you know, a Retina iMac and then two Retina displays, assuming that the GPU that would be in that iMac would even have the bandwidth to drive to external like 5K displays, that's my wallet hurt.
Yeah, you think your iPhone 7 hisses when you update your photo your photo gallery.
But aren't you kind of like a technology cutter? Don't you just like go ahead and, you know, I know that's going to really hurt the pocketbook, just but I'm going to do it. Just, oh, that hurts great.
Jump into that deep freezing pool of new technology water. Watch my wallet bleed out. I mean, yeah. I just finished building my SIM cockpit. Now that I have I've got the cockpit thing and the joysticks on the side and the VR set up and the monitors, that's all done. Which means that I guess now it's time for the new iMac and everything else.
I will say that this year I have not bought really any new high-end technology. No new cameras, no new computers.
No new iPhone.
It's time to treat yourself, Jay.
The iPhone was a small splurge. I mean, I did it in smaller chunks, but not. It didn't add up as much. I bought a new iPhone this year. That was my camera upgrade.
Always-on listening devices.
I bought
my
Amazon. But yeah. we're talking $700 as opposed to like $4,000 or $5,000.
Do you use a Retina iMac?
I don't. No.
I'm curious how that, and I mean, you guys may know better, but I'm curious how that works with when you're doing photography when you're doing your post processing and you pull your RAWs out, because the I guess it wouldn't have to scale, but it's already scaling. Like, how does that work when you want to zoom in and look 1-to-1 at your image because you might want to look at like one section of it? If you do it on a regular non-retina display and you go 1-to-1, you know, it's like the image is enormous and you can see the details and you can get in there and focus. But how does that work when 1-to-1 is basically the size of the screen? Because it's, I mean, what's a 22, 24 megapixel image from a camera? It's 5,000 by 3,000 something or other, and that matches the display.
It's a 5K, so it's like a postage stamp.
Yeah, it's like, so what is it?
scale it up so you can actually see the detail?
Does it scale it up so that you can see tiny details and do small incremental adjustments? I mean, I guess it would have to, because people are using these displays for that kind of stuff, aren't they? I mean,
I don't know. But my point I was going to make is that it's been nice to watch my bank account kind of go up.
Go the right way.
Go the right way for a change. And it's like, I knew how high it could get based on what my annual spending was going to be, and I knew I was going to run this kind of... But now, you know, it's like finally seeing myself, you know, go further into the black. It's like, holy... That which only shines an unforgiving light on how much I've spent.
Camera glass, I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, have you not splurged on some new lenses?
I've got quite the arsenal right now.
And Sony's got a new big fancy DSLR coming out. Body coming out.
The A99 II is coming out. It'll be released in November.
Aren't there two of them?
There was a new big one, I thought. Let's see here.
On Sony Alpha rumors, the only thing on Sony I've seen is the A99 II.
Is that the one where the body was about $3,500?
Yes.
Okay, that was the one I saw, though.
Yes. And what, you know, just to go off on a camera tangent here for a little bit, I'm a little disappointed because the camera, the the Sony A99, has got the same sensor in it as the Sony A7 R2, which is the mirrorless. Right. So they're basically the same camera, but one mounts the A-mount lenses and one mounts the E-mount lenses. And they're both the same price, approximately the same price. So the question on Sony that people are having is like, are they going to continue to support? You know, a lot of people are ditching the alpha mount and going to the E-mount, to the mirrorless, and recreating their stable of lenses. I still, you know, have all my A-mount stuff. It's nice that I can adapt it to the
I was going
to
ask, is there just a little ring adapter?
There is.
There's
a little ring
on?
Adapter. It's not terribly expensive. I can use all my A-mount on that. But the appeal of the E-mount is the smaller form factor and the lenses that are designed for that. So as I get on in years, this stuff...
Gesundheit.
This camera gear is heavier and heavier and heavier to carry around. And, you know, you talk about having a full frame... good body SLR, and you talk about having 2 to 3 really high-end good solid pieces of glass, like a you know, wide angle 16-35, 24-70, and a 70-200 f/2.8s. That is a hefty amount of weight to just carry around. And you can go so much lighter with the E-mount and have the you can now get 2.8 aperture in the E-mount, but it's f/4 was the standard.
I was going to say, that still is at f/2.8, that's still a big lens.
Yeah, but the f/4s it's great.
Canon's doing that too. Canon is redoing all of their line at f/4 and smaller, which kind of, it bugs me because I'm not good enough at making photography to understand how they can... to understand how they can remake all their lenses in f/4 and resell them, because they have a new, basically across, like they have a new 70-200 f/4, they have a new 24-70 f/4, they have all these new f/4s, but like, how do you get the same image quality wide open at f/4 that you would get on the previous ones at 2.8? And you're giving up how many? You're giving up a full stop. And they all have stabilization now, and the old ones didn't, so maybe you can take that stop back. But still, it's just like, it just seems, I don't know, it seems
silly.
Well,
the new bodies have greater sensitivity, less noise, so you're able to shoot at faster shutter speeds at the smaller aperture. What you lose in that stop really comes down to depth of field and how you're managing that.
Okay.
And if you haven't started, you know, I mean, I want the, I come from the school. I want that stop regardless. I want that 2.8. I want my prime lenses to be 2.0, 1.8, 1.4.
Well, because I'm thinking if your zoom lens is wide open at 2.8, it's probably not going to be as sharp at 2.8 as it would be if you could crank it up maybe a little to f4 or to 5.6 or to 8. And then it's going to be super tack sharp.
Well, yeah, you get a, you know, obviously, you know, not obviously.
And if you got to start at f4 and then crank it up, you're losing more stops.
Well, you generally speaking, you know, f5, 6 to f8 is usually your sweet spot on a lens anyway. And if you are shooting wide open at 2.8, depending on the distance from the subject and how much you want of your face to be in focus when I'm shooting with this lens, I'm going to have to open that up a little bit, f4, 5, f5, 6, to, so that your nose is not blurry and your eyes are sharp.
Right.
Know? So it really depends on how you're shooting and what you're shooting. If I look at my concert photography, for example, and Groovehouse may be able to back me up on this or at least chime in, you know, shooting at a distance, a reasonable distance, depending on the lens you're using, at a concert, you're almost always shooting at f2.8. Is that...
And you got to crank your ISO, too.
Correct.
Yeah, you're cranking your ISO, too. So having that stop is very helpful to get the light and also to isolate your subject. But, you know, if you're not worried about the depth of field and you can go up to f4, f5, 6, you might get the guitar. And, you know, one of the things I notice in concert photography is shooting at those wide open apertures. If you catch focus on the mic stand, then you get a really tack sharp mic stand and a blurry musician. And if you can shoot at a smaller aperture and get more depth of field, and you catch the focus on the mic stand,
then it's okay.
It's fine. And so you need a sensor that's going to be able to allow you to shoot at the fast enough shutter speed at those low lights at that aperture so that it comes out sharp in the first place. So it's all complicated.
It is.
When you guys are shooting at really high resolution, are you guys saving in GIFs or GIFs for the most part?
Yes.
Animated GIFs now.
Oh, nice. Right.
The iPhone has the animated GIF feature. Have you seen that on the new camera?
Does it actually do that, though? I'm pretty sure it just saves a QuickTime movie.
I don't know what
I think it's just a QuickTime movie.
I don't know exactly what it's doing there, but it's on by default. It's called the
Moments.
Live.
It. Oh, okay.
And so, like, if I take a picture of you, move your head.
I did not just move my head.
Does it do it?
You have to hold it down. You have to hold your, if you hold your
thumb.
Now
look.
I think it'll replay if you give it a force press or whatever they call it. It'll recycle through.
Use the force.
There you go. if you use the force to make that happen. I will wave hello at you with that finger.
What is the thing that's going in before it?
I don't know. That's clearly I am a vampire and cannot be properly photographed.
That is there a way to publish a live photo like that?
Would you want to?
This one totally would like to tweet
giving the salute. I don't know. Press hit the share button. If Twitter has an add-in or an extension or whatever they call it in the thing, you should be able to share it directly into a tweet.
Yeah, there's, you know, if you send it as an iMessage, it will maintain the live photo.
Okay.
But if you go to edit it or upload it to certain most things, it'll just get the first still. Yeah, it won't get all the live bit.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's my new favorite photo. I set that as my wallpaper.
You pull your phone out and it's like.
For those at home that can't see my phone.
Everybody.
Lee is giving me the thumbs up with all right.
He says, you're number one.
I am number one.
That's the internet salute. That's what we used to call it.
Both hands.
You've heard of the three-finger salute? No, not this. All right, so Technology Bites rambles on. It's 30 minutes past the hour. Got another half hour left of the show. What's the next segment, Pete?
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip
in the snart tank?
Well, maybe if you get too tired of carrying around a lens, the lens and the camera body, or even your phone, and that just gets to be too much for you, you can switch to the Snapchat Spectacles. It's a camera-laden sunglasses that let you film a 10-second snap with a single button press, wirelessly sending it to your phone and up to the cloud. Basically, it looks like a pair of sunglasses with kind of round lenses, and on the corners of the lenses, there's little yellow circles, and one of the circles has lights, little dot lights around it, and they light up to let others know that you're filming. And then it has a carrying case that recharges them, I guess, between your snaps. So see, now you can just, instead of having to dig in your camera bag and put together all your speed load your lenses, you can just put on your spectacles and take your 10-second snap. So it's only $130, so I guess if you're a Snapchat addict, you can use this as opposed to, or as another alternative to taking pics with your phone.
Sorry, people, had a drum solo next door. We had to interrupt. Sorry about that.
What was that?
Now the guy in the studio, in the HD studio, was rocking out, and he was using the table as a drum kit. It was.
It's kind of awesome.
It was kind of cool, but kind of weird.
Yeah, but not realizing that sound conducts through those kinds of materials.
What does audio have to do with any of this?
I don't know.
Look at my phone.
Yeah. Can't you see this?
At this, okay. Next, this one is real interesting. If you've heard us talk about the Internet of Things, and you thought you'd want to build some kind of device, there is a new Arduino, crowdfunded ESLOV SLOV kit, might be the ticket to get into the whole Internet of Things without lots of programming and wiring. All you have to do to create a basic Internet of Things device is snap in some plug-and-play modules, connect your creation to your PC, and draw connections between those modules in an editor. So it's like a visual kind of thing. You only have to dive into serious programming if you have specific needs. There's ready-made code for common devices like air quality sensors, baby monitors, and remote-controlled thermostats. If you like the idea, you can pledge to get one of several SLOV kits that's more likely to meet your technological ambitions. It'll get if you contribute around $55, it'll get you the core Wi-Fi hub, which includes a motion sensor. And when you get to higher ones, you can get multiple modules, with the highest tiers having exotic parts like Hall sensors and OLED screens. Arduino hopes to ship its crowdfunded kits in June 2017 if it meets its funding goals. It's not the cheapest way to get started on a DIY, Internet of Things device, but if you're going to teach kids to build electronics or want to gradually ease in, this might be a simpler way that you can kind of get your head around it before you dive into the big stuff. And also in the DIY front, there's a company called this is another Kickstarter, Kano DIY Gadget Kits. They're sort of, I guess in a sense, they're kind of the descendant of those old Radio Shack, the single kits. I mean, there used to be the like 35-in-1, but they also had little kits that let you just make a radio or... So these are fun ways to learn more about our electronic existence while making some useful toys. One kit lets you build a camera so that you can use that instead of your, I'm sure your like DIY toy kit would be a great way to take pictures. Learning more about photography by selecting lenses and making filters. While another is a simple grid of pixels you can hook up and program to do everything from displaying sports scores to playing simple tilt-based games. And then finally, there's a speaker kit that lets you wire up a Bluetooth speaker of your very own and adds a synthesizer to the mix to help you learn about electronic music. All three kits work with simple software that lets you add custom functions. And, this is a Kickstarter, so you want to go find them on Kickstarter. You can purchase them separately or obviously in a bundle. But the cool part is, I think for kids especially, or just adults who want to play around with this stuff, the little kits are a good way to start out and to kind of get your, figure out how this stuff works a little bit and get your feet under you if you want to try to do more stuff. And lastly, one that maybe I should invest in, The Blue Company, you know, does USB microphones, and of course, each newer one that comes out is better than the one before. I've got a Blue Yeti; that's what I'm using on my end here. But the new one is the Blue Raspberry microphone, which has excellent audio quality and a highly portable package. It does it with proven microphone technology and a new patent-pending internal acoustic diffuser that mimics the acoustic treatments found in studios and concert halls to focus on your voice or instrument and ignore unwanted noise like barking dogs or doors or television sets in the other room. The folding integrated stand also helps in this regard, minimizing surface contact and isolating the mic from vibrations and other noise. It connects over USB or Lightning. It works with a host of both mobile and desktop recording apps and comes with a soft carrying pouch. It's not an inexpensive little thing if you're looking to get into serious recording, but and actually it's on the high end of what they've priced stuff at before. It's around $200, but the quality of their stuff is pretty good. So if you're interested in something along those lines, you might want to try it out. Right. And again, maybe I should try one. I've thought about getting. I've seen for at home, there are deals that are like sort of mini recording studio, like in a like sort of a box that you put around the microphone, and so that it shuts out a lot more noise. But I've got to get off of a temporary desk before I can do something along those lines.
Get yourself a nice desk, Pete. You deserve it.
yeah. Well, we moved into some temporary quarters of some months ago that were supposed to be temporary, and then they turned out to not be temporary. So it's a little disorganized, and we've been chipping away at it. But there's not a lot of bonus space to set up something more elaborate like I had before. So, anyways, that's the Try Buyer Fry list for tonight.
All right, so we are we got 20 minutes left in the program tonight. Has it got a Barrett time tonight?
Yeah, we did that. top of the hour.
We've done it.
Living in a van down by the river.
Has everybody seen the? Obviously, we would speak in terms of non-spoilers, but the finale. Everybody saw this finale of Mr. Robot or
Han Solo dies.
No, I don't watch that show.
I still haven't.
I haven't seen the last three episodes.
Really?
Oh wow!
Yeah.
I still haven't, but
let me just sum it up for you.
No.
Have you not watched it?
I have watched it, but I still don't want to know.
I've
watched it twice, actually. I had to go back to get everything, but I'm not currently current.
Have you tried saying, Alexa, can you explain Mr. Robot to me?
Alexa's still trying to explain Primer to me, so once that wraps up,
there is a whole Amazon Echo scene.
Oh, yeah.
In Mr. Robot.
I have seen that.
Have you?
Even though I haven't seen that episode, I did see a cut of that sequence.
So the Mr. Robot podcast that Ars Technica does, that done by my excellent coworker Nathan Matais, you should listen to it if you like the show, because it's a great podcast. But apparently this week, and I'm not involved in it, this week is the final one, and he had as his guest Stephanie Corneliuson, who plays Joanna Wellick, and they talked for quite a bit about Joanna Wellick's role in season two. And apparently she says a line that I won't repeat on the air, but it's like a bombshell line that she delivers, and they talk about the delivery of that line and how that came up in the writing room and how that went in the first reading.
Which character was this?
Joanna Wellick.
Tyrell's wife,
Tyrell's,
I believe.
Yeah, Tyrell's wife. She's
a character.
She is a character in a television show. It's that person okay. Right there. The one who speaks
discount Angelina Jolie.
The one that has a baby and a proclivity to tie me up, tie me down.
Yes.
What was the bombshell line?
It has language that you can't repeat on the air, but it was very effective.
Have you noticed how I've noticed this on a lot of the cable channels, like AMC and...
They're saying more stuff?
Well, they're saying the F word, and rather than bleeping it, they're just cutting out the audio between the first letter and the last letter.
So you hear the mm-hmm. F.
You hear the F, and you hear
the N part.
Yeah, but
I don't know how far we can push it here on public radio.
It sounds close enough to the real thing, but instead of having this irritating or distracting beep sound, mm-hmm. they just zero
and
out.
Then you're like, why do they keep talking about fracking?
They zero out the volume on the word, so you get the impact of the word, and it almost makes it seem like you're hearing the word.
Well, there were several instances in Breaking Bad where the F word was muttered, and one where it was shown written on screen, and they pixelated out the word on the note. That was a good episode. That was with Mike. Anyway, but yeah, no, I've noticed that it's especially on the not the basic cable stuff, but the I don't know, what do you call it, mid-tier cable, not the HBOs, but like, you know, the AMCs and the USAs FX. And stuff. Yeah, those networks that it's getting like watching British television.
Well, they're saying the S word. No problem.
That one, yeah, that's already flown.
That's free and clear to offend you or not.
Shareware?
Yes.
That species has flown the fan.
Spyware.
It has flown, smashed into the fan. Fan's been cleaned. We're done with it.
But yeah, okay, so.
I think that's an impact of the success of the shows that were on Showtime and HBO and all that, where they didn't have any of those limits. Is starting to trickle down, and you just wonder, is the day going to come when it gets to broadcast?
No, probably not.
When they finally decide, you know, that we don't need to be so Puritan about this stuff since it's all over the place.
Nope, anyway. There's always going to be somebody writing to complain to the FCC or whatever. But wasn't there a story, and I'm going to mangle the details, so forgive me in advance, wasn't there a story that analyzed the complaint sources that had been written in to the FCC over... like complaints about television, not just language, but complaints about television content. And it was revealed that like a very small number of complainants, like less than 500 complainants were responsible for like the vast majority of all, like 90% of all complaints that went into the FCC. It was like some sort of like incredibly, like there was just this group of like really angry, really puritanical people who just sat there and wrote letters to the FCC all day for years about everything.
Why wouldn't those people just turn off their televisions?
Well, because that stuff is still out there, and that just really angers them.
Because they don't feel right unless they can stop the rest of us from seeing all this. The main thing I wonder is, hasn't anybody pointed out to them the kinds of things you can see on the internet? Because they'd never come back. They'd be so busy writing about all the stuff they saw on various and sundry websites.
They probably are writing. It's just going to email addresses that nobody reads.
Okay, here it is. It's actually, the article is relatively old now. It's from 2004. But yeah, it says that it's an activist organization responsible for 99% of FCC complaints. It says... let's see, let me find here. It's the PTC. It's the Parents Television Council, or at least it was at the time. It said that, I'm trying to find a neat little excerpt to read here. This is an older article. For example, the agency on October 12th, in proposing fines of nearly $1.2 million against Fox Broadcasting and its affiliates, said it received 159 complaints against Married by America, which featured strippers partly obscured by pixelation. But when asked, the FCC's Enforcement Bureau said it could only find 90 complaints from 23 individuals. And it just goes on and on and on here about the majority of these fines, 99% it says, are all coming from tiny little groups of incredibly angry people who want to dictate morality to you. So don't let them say bad words, just not on our show.
Well, or as we like to refer to them, proto-trolls, because their descendants are all over the internet in small numbers, making it miserable for normal people and various other targets that don't agree with them.
Indeed.
All right.
But
I said good day.
I said good day.
So, yeah, the professionally outraged, I don't know. Somebody should just maybe get them a basic cable subscription.
No, then they would just write more letters.
Yeah, except the nice part is if they're complaining about the cable shows, then the FCC can take in all the letters and wait a long time before they mention that, oh yeah, you know, if it's on broadcast, we can't do anything at all about it. But,
all right, do we have a last segment?
Yeah, take us home,
Pete. Let's see here. We've only got about 10 minutes left. Yeah, I need to prepare a little bit for it, but there is the last scientific segment.
Big science announcements this week. Elon Musk has been musking it up.
And there's going to be a black moon.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
science. First up, you know, it's been a big deal. You may have heard, it seems like the media, for some reason, has like paid more attention to it. Antibiotic resistant bacteria being a problem, and other type stuff, you know, these super bugs. And the thing is that, you know, the problem is they're resistant to all the different antibiotics we have. There was one, I think part of what triggered it is that some weeks ago in Florida, there was a woman who had a antibiotic resistant infection that could withstand basically the best, the last gasp, strongest, antibiotic that we've come up with. And so the interesting thing on this one is a 25-year-old student has discovered a way to destroy antibiotic-resistant bacteria without antibiotics at all. Shu Lam successfully destroyed superbugs in lab tests using a star-shaped polymer that literally rips the cells of the bacteria to shreds. The breakthrough could signal a complete overhaul in how the medical community approaches these deadly bacteria. Currently, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, including methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus, Staphylococcus aureus, or as the rest of us know it, MRSA, M-R-S-A, kills 700,000 people per year. So this is not some a few people get sick from it. Scientists are worried the number could skyrocket to 10 million by the year 2050. So they've been searching for ways to successfully intervene before more damage is done. Shu Lam is a student at the University of Melbourne and believes she may have found the solution. Her study, published in Nature Microbiology, details the mechanism of SNAPs, S-N-A-P-Ps, structurally nano-engineered antimicrobial peptide polymers. Basically, they work by directly targeting, attacking, and destabilizing the cell membranes of superbugs. They're large enough that they don't affect healthy cells, which are affected by conventional approaches that poison, you know, the bacteria. So some solutions, that's part of the problem is, you know, if the bacteria is resistant enough, then it's going to do more damage to, like, normal cells than it does the bacteria. So far, Lam has successfully tested SNAPs on 6 different strains of superbugs in a laboratory setting and 1 in live mice. In each experiment, the nasty bacteria were all killed and did not develop resistance to the polymers in future generations. So it is possible with this, though, that they are onto something really big on solving our nightmare of antibiotic resistance. And then finally, the
question
story
is,
that,
when will Lysol have it?
I don't know. Spray it all over the place.
Yeah, chug it. Well, see, there's the problem. You know? That's the problem with the Lysol. The cool thing with the polymers, and I think part of why it's such a revolutionary thought is that essentially they tear it up. It's a physical attack. As opposed to, I guess, you know, if you think about it, sort of the antibiotic thing is more of a chemical attack on it, where this is basically like physically, it's really kind of ultra nano. So, I mean, big credit to somebody to figure that one out. I mean, at that scale, to figure out what kind of shape you would need that would damage only the bacteria and not, you know, because obviously you can't just like swallow razor blades to cut up the bacteria. But the other story, final story, is as Lee just mentioned, Elon Musk has talked more about his plans for Mars. Elon Musk and SpaceX, they want to build a new city and help up to 1 million people move there over the next 40 to 100 years. There's just one catch. It's on Mars. So you may have heard the rough outline of this plan earlier. found this article on CNET talking about, does colonizing Mars even make sense as humanity's next big venture into space? The speech, Musk spoke to the International Astronautical Congress in Mexico on Tuesday. But before that, this writer from CNET spent the weekend in Austin hearing from so-called new space scientists, engineers, and entrepreneurs at the inaugural New Worlds Conference. Let's see, if Elon Musk has anything close to peers when it comes to expanding society and business into space, this was a gathering of them. Musk buddy and SpaceX investor Richard Garriott, who some with the show know him even better than Elon Musk, even mentioned in his keynote how obsessed Musk is with Mars. Let's see, part of the things is, the important question is Mars really a place we want to go? After all, there's another place we see much bigger and brighter in the sky every night. We've already been there and even left some vehicles there. They need to move. Settling Mars is physically possible, but I have questions about whether it's desirable, said Pascal Lee, chairman of the Mars Institute. So that's a real question that, you know, obviously that means that there could be some real challenges. Dr. Jim Logan, who spent 2 decades as a medical expert in various capacities at NASA, noted at the same conference that roaming around Mars wouldn't really be like Mark Watney's adventures in The Martian. One of the things that, and I hadn't really thought about this, maybe that's why more people think Mars is, that we're close to being able to settle it. He says, quote, there's too much radiation for just hanging out in spacesuits and rovers, he said, noting that humans would need to be several feet underground or behind some other serious radiation shielding to survive on Mars. The kind of rough outline on Elon Musk's plan is, I think he's talking about within 9 years starting to send people to Mars, one-way trip. You would go there and presumably not be expecting to ever come back, and that the cost that you would pay them $200,000 to participate. The thing with Elon Musk is there's been enough things where you kind of go, nobody could do that. And he's done all of the ones that so far have happened. So you have to wonder if he's not going to, if he's not going to succeed on this one. Of course, one has to think, do you want to save up the $200,000 and is this one where you want to be a leading edge adopter of it? I think I prefer to go when they've opened resorts.
Yeah, you're just going to be one of the unpaid interns of
a new life travel. Awaits you.
Are you going to be
in the off-world colonies?
Are you going to be a Marsha Can or a Marsha Can't?
Marsha.
All right. Well, what a great show. Next week
or something
will be awesome in its own right. Go to kpft.org and make a donation.
Send money now.
Avoid money now for the future. All right. Well, this has been Technology Bites. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
cuckoo.net.
Greetings, KPFT listeners. My name is Alma Vizcarra. As local election supervisor, it is my pleasure to introduce to you a local station board listener delegate candidate.
I'm Georgia Provost, and I'm excited to be a candidate for KPFT Foundation Board. I'm a business owner, professional photographer, historian, community activist, and volunteer. I'm a retired HISD educator, a retired TSU professor. I would be an SS to the board. I bring experience, knowledge, and understanding and wisdom. I served on the board of the YMCA, Houston Area Urban League, Julia C. Hester House, and the Youth for Christ Foundation. I am actively involved in the business, culture, educational, humanitarian effort, youth leadership, as well as political, religious, and spiritual sector of Houston-Harris County. Again, I will be an SS to the board. Please vote for Georgia Provost. Love you. Thank you.
The Pacifica Foundation, the parent organization of this station, is now holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's five signal areas. Our governance model is a unique one. Listeners and volunteers compose our local and national boards of directors. Another means in which we are unique is in how you can cast your vote. This format, called single transferable voting, is a voting system in which voters each have one vote, but rank candidates in order of choice. In a single transferable vote election, candidates must achieve a threshold of first choice votes to win. For those without an overall majority of first choices, candidates with the fewest votes are eliminated one by one. Ballots cast for those candidates are then recounted for the next choice candidate until a winner achieves a majority among remaining candidates. For more information about single transferable voting, visit fairvote.org. Don't forget to participate. Don't forget to participate. Don't forget to participate. Don't forget to participate. Don't forget to participate.